order.
Pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic which stands one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please.
Eric Anderson.
Here.
April Bingo.
Here.
Kathy Buckley.
Here.
Leonard King.
Here.
Richard Levine.
Here.
Ed Marin.
Here.
Debbie Pasco.
Here.
Colleen Stone.
Here.
Steve Trombley.
Here.
Okay, we got a little change here. I got an executive session we need to go into. I accept a motion to go into executive session.
So moved.
Motion by Richard.
Second.
Second by Kathy.
For what?
For discuss particular person's employment history.
Okay.
All in favor?
Aye.
Yes. Ayes have it. We're going to go up in the upper room.
Our room's open.
I bet she's ready to play now.
Hey, I need a motion to come out of executive session.
Second. Debbie made the motion.
Debbie made the motion.
Kathy.
All in favor?
Aye.
Yes. Ayes have it. So we have an addition to the, it's a late item agenda. We added under item B to miscellaneous late item agendas. It's a whole paper here. It will be passed out by the clerk to the public. And need a motion to accept this added.
Motion.
Motion by Richard. Seconded by Debbie.
No.
I was like, ask somebody that.
Eric.
Okay.
All in favor?
Aye.
Against? Aye. Have it. You got them to pass out?
Yeah.
Maybe it's going
to
be with you.
So it's A or B?
Yes. Okay, under miscellaneous, resolved that the superintendent of schools recommends that the Board of Education to approve the side letter of agreement between the Beacon Town Teachers Association, NYSA, AFT, NEA, AFL-CIO, and Beacon Town Central School District dated 2/14/13 and authorize the superintendent of schools to execute said letter of agreement on behalf of the district.
Motion.
Motion by Eric.
Second.
Seconded by Pauline. Any questions? Roll call.
Eric Anderson.
Yes.
April Bingo.
Yes.
Kathy Buckley.
Yes.
Leonard King.
Yes.
Richard Levine.
Yes.
Ed Marin.
Yes.
Debbie Pasco.
Yes.
Colleen Stone.
Yes.
Steve Trombley.
Yes.
Okay, under the late item agenda, resignation. Resolved that the superintendent of schools recommends to the Board of Education to accept the resignation of Amy Campbell as assistant principal of Beacon Town Middle School, effective March 4, 2013, pending approval of her appointment as a principal.
Motion.
First?
Go ahead, second.
Okay, April made the motion, Debbie seconded it. All in favor?
Aye.
Against? Ayes have it. Item B, resolved that the superintendent of schools recommends to the Board of Education to accept the resignation of Elaine Dixon as interim middle school principal of the Beatman Town Middle School effective March 4th, 2013, pending approval of her appointment as principal.
Motion.
Motion by Richard, seconded by Kathy. All in favor?
Aye.
Against? Ayes have it. Appointments. Resolved that the superintendent of schools recommends to the Board of Education to appoint Amy Campbell on a 3-year probationary appointment effective March 4, 2013 and ending on March 3, 2016 as a principal in the tenure area of principal at a salary of $81,153 prorated for the 2012-13 school year. Mrs. Campbell holds initial school building leader certificate and professional school district leader certificate.
Motion. Second.
Motion by Debbie, seconded by Kathy. All in favor?
Aye.
Against? Ayes have it. Item B, resolved that the superintendent of schools recommends the Board of Education to appoint Elaine Dixon in a 3-year probationary appointment effective December 7, 2012. 17?
Yes.
December 17th and ending on December 16, 2015. As a principal in the tenure area of principals at a salary of $83,000 prorated for the 2012-13 school year. Ms. Dixon holds initial school building leadership certificate. Motion?
Motion. Second.
I think it was Pauline. And then Debbie second.
Or Debbie or
Kathy? It's okay.
Kathy.
Okay.
That's what I have, Pauline Kathy.
All in favor?
Aye.
Against? Ayes have it. Item C, resolved that Superintendent of Schools recommends that the Board of Education to appoint Brittany
Tribendis
to a position of interim middle school assistant principal effective March 4th, 2013 through June 30th, 2013 at a salary of $62,500 prorated for 2012-13 school year. Mrs. Dennis holds initial school building leader certificate and professional school district leader certificate. Richard.
Second.
Second by Debbie. All in favor?
Aye.
Against? Ayes have it.
Congratulations.
Yes, both.
Everybody there?
Amy, Elaine.
Congratulations. Okay, item C, 2013-14 budget work session.
The budget work session, by way of a brief introduction, because this is going to be largely Mary's taking you through some new data that we have, but I want a couple of opening comments, One of them is as a reminder, like we need to be reminded, that this whole situation in Washington, D.C. will ultimately have a ripple effect on our district, as it will all districts in the country. And so as we head into this period of time with, I guess, the days ticking by, our budget conversations get even more compromised with uncertainty as to what's going to happen as a result of the stalemate in D.C. Why is what happens in D.C. affecting us? Because we get federal dollars. And so if there's a change in federal allocations to schools because of the government's failure to reach agreement and the acts that we keep hearing about falls on all of these programs and services, federal programs will be affected. So Mary's going to tell you a little bit about our commitment, if you will, or really our benefit as benefactors of the federal government, what our current monies would be. We have absolutely no way of knowing tonight what that will change to. We simply know that without a compromise in D.C., there's expected to be some change. So we'll get into that in a few minutes. The second piece about it is understanding and recognizing again that we'll have three contract negotiations. I'm just repeating things we already know, but for new audience members as well. We have three contracts that will be up for negotiations this year. The first exchange of proposals will be held with the Beekman Town Teachers Association this Thursday between the district negotiations team and the Beekman Town Teachers Association negotiations team will actually swap proposals. And the intent of that evening is simply to get an understanding of what the proposals are asking. It's not the formal bargaining on the items that are presented. It's simply to say, do we all understand what the parties have asked of each other to understand? So that's going to be Thursday evening. The other two bargaining groups, I informed today that I'd be prepared, as soon as they are prepared, to assemble the other teams to start their negotiations with them. I just will need to get from them dates and when they're ready, and then I'll bring that information back to the board. So all of that is really much connected to our budget. Mary does have some new information, well, we all do, but Mary has some new information as a result of the governor's new release of state aid. That's one piece that she'll be talking about. And the attempt to provide a range or a percentage, if you will, on what the property tax levy increase could be. She'll have some information to help you with that area. And in her very capable hands, I then turn over the conversation for Mary.
So the first topic is under the federal funds that are potentially at risk under the sequestration. Currently, we have five programs that are federally funded under our grant programs. So these are services we're providing to students that are funded with grant dollars, federal grant dollars flowing through the district, not running through the general fund. We have the Title I program, the Title II program, which are services for underprivileged children, as well as IDEA 611 and 619, which are services for special needs children. And under the Title I program, there's an allocation for incarcerated youth education services, which are for students under age 21 that are in the Clinton County Jail, which falls within the Beekmantown School District, so that's part of some of our grant funding as well. The combination of all of those programs in this school year totals $1.1 million. We have approximately a dozen people that are paid out of that program that are providing services to students. That's our total program. So what the cut is yet to be determined. Assuming that there are negotiations going on in Washington, I can't predict, you know, how that will be hit. The impact it may have is, to the extent we lose any funding in these programs and we have to discontinue any of these programs, there are senior staff people, instructional and non-instructional, in these programs which may be able to bump back into regular programs, so there will be a little bit of a ripple effect. But effectively, we would be absorbing many of these people in the general fund and then displacing others. Potentially, we don't know.
How many of those programs are mandated?
These are all extra.
Incarcerated youth is mandated, though.
This is an extra piece. The main program is mandated. That funding under the state is not at jeopardy at this point.
Okay.
All of these federal dollars are extra services to be directed at these special targeted groups. I don't know. I wish I could give you more definite information. It's pretty much up in the air. But that's kind of our pool of what's at risk potentially under the federal flag.
The various folks that work on districts' behalf, you know, school boards, associations, superintendents, associations, etc., as soon as there's something to announce out of Washington, they'll be pressing hard for what's the impact on the districts in my, you know, county, and then that gets processed and sent out to us quickly as, here is what you could expect to be reductions in your federal program.
Have we received any of those funds yet this year, though? Haven't we received some of those?
Yes, we have, and this year's money is not at risk. This year's 12-13 grants have been appropriated, and those programs are underway. What's at risk is 13-14. Those grant applications, the grant coordinators within the district start working on those. The first ones are actually due, I want to say June 30th, for a July 1 year start. Those are the IDEA programs. The title programs run on a September to August year, if I recall properly.
Okay. So we're actually only talking, as far as sequestration would affect us, this would actually technically not only affect us on the 2013-14?
Based on the information I know right now, this is a 13-14 impact, not a current year impact.
If we were to lose all $1.1 million, correct?
Correct. $1.1 million is our total program base. The cut to that, I've read 8%, I've read 9%, I've read 12%. I don't know what the cuts will be. And assuming there's ongoing negotiations to avoid sequestration, there could be more or less.
Okay. And when we'll get that fixed number, as I said, I was saying a minute ago, once that impact is known at the national level, then our groups all get, they all huddle together and say, what's it mean to you at your district?
Right, because my question was going to be, if we have an anticipated cut, whatever that percentage is, is there a collateral overhead impact on the overall standard fund? Because if we're using this money for these programs, but it also helps support the overhead for a collective group, doesn't have any kind of collateral?
We don't really have overhead costs or indirect costs built in because these budgets have actually been squeezed over the recent few years. We're predominantly funding instructional staff and direct service related non-instructional staff and their related benefits, their retirement and their health insurance.
Okay.
So we're not pulling in any central office administration or mail processing, or there's no central overhead costs that are really funneling through there, just direct costs for those programs.
Richard.
Yeah, I have a question. Did we talk about, I take it this is different, because we talked about funding before, any grant money we had, and we had said we took all the people off that we could, and then anybody left on grants, if the job went, if the money went away, the job was going away. But under the old system, they couldn't bump anybody. Under this system, she's saying they could bump people.
Yeah, we never changed that.
No, individuals, the bargaining rights of the of who's occupying the positions trumps the source of the income to pay for that position, if I can put it in that terms. So that translation, simple translation is, if there's a if a person occupying a position that's currently we're able to pay through federal dollars, it loses their position because of federal dollars. All the rules apply to them in terms of, well, what are my rights in my unit in terms of, am I the one affected?
I just must have understood it, because back then when you said the job goes away, I assumed it was the person doing
it. No, it's okay. Not the person. And Mary was spot on in saying that's, talk about effect, it's a dollar effect, but it also is a potentially people effect. There will be needs that will be filled, but they may not be with the people who are currently filling them.
The second part, tying to Ed's question, is it's going to have an impact, because if you got someone making $80,000 on one of these grants and they knock somebody out with 55, it's an it impacts our bottom line.
Yep.
Because that can happen. That could be money that we don't have.
Right.
So the seniority status of the person covered by a grant, and you can imagine our logic, we tried to provide on the positive part of that logic is, try to take wherever we can advantage of someone else's dollars to pay for services, the salaries and benefits associated with a particular assignment. Well, that works when it works. It also works when it starts to unravel and reverse engines when that source of income is gone, because they go someplace. You know, that's the point. They're going to be moving someplace in our general fund.
The other item of information from a budgeting perspective is on the revenue side. We are continuing to work out the numbers, but the sheet in front of you, which I believe we're also going to post to the website just for budget information mm-hmm. purposes, these are the budget proposals that the governor released towards the end of January. There's a comparison here of 2012 versus 2013, what it looked like. Overall, we have an overall total aid increase of approximately $472,000. That represents about 3% of our overall aid increases. Individually, within the lines in here, it's very important to point out and to bring your attention to the first item under general purpose aid and foundation aid. You will see is $11.6 million and some change. That's the biggest portion of our approximately $15 million in aid we get from the state. That aid category, foundation aid, has been frozen since 2008. So just knowing, you know, we're not trying to scare anybody or put fear in people. The reality is these revenues have not increased, a big portion of these revenues. We've got some nominal increases, which is good news. We're not looking at decreases right now. So that's positive. Also, on the bottom left-hand corner of this diagram is a graph to just show you where the aid level was in 08-09 versus where it's proposed to be in 13-14. Again, I'll just remind you, these are tentative numbers. These are the governor's numbers. On April 1st, potentially, if we have a New York State budget, we'll have executive numbers
yeah.
for this. Overall, from 08-09 to 13-14 proposal, we are looking at a decrease over that five-year span of time of $1.7 million in our revenue sources. The sum of how the district has absorbed that and made up for it was to spend down the excess fund balance that was on the books back in 08-09. That's gotten us through. And the board has approved at a past meeting that we will use the remaining $1,065,000 as a revenue source in this year's budget, just as a reminder item. That, and if anybody has any questions on any of these individual line items, again, these numbers are not in concrete. These are fluid numbers that change periodically. These are snapshots, and the snapshots are intended to give you the governor's proposal this January versus the governor's proposal last January and what those specific snapshots are. We reconcile this aid on an ongoing basis. and it's fluid because our enrollment numbers are fluid, attendance numbers are fluid, expense reimbursements are fluid, all of those numbers have an impact on this. The other area that I wanted to just generally speak about, a lot of times we get caught up in our own situation and, you know, woe is we and how are we going to do this. I have a report here from an Association of School Business Administrators where a survey was taken across 48 states. So it's not even limited to just a New York State public education issue. This is, you know, what public education is dealing with on a national basis. And what the all states have reduced revenue sources for schools, and schools are struggling with that. Some of the school districts across the nation continue to report a breadth and depth of budget cuts reaching across the past 3 years at a minimum. Stopgap efforts to avoid and minimize job cuts have been short-lived, and reductions in force will continue to be a reality in the near future to balance these budgets. Two-thirds of respondents across these 48 states, and the respondents were across, 582 school districts. Two-thirds of the respondents eliminated positions or furloughed personnel. Additionally, the impact that this had, the budget cuts reached beyond personnel decisions. The impact continued and increased the intensity across districts. More than one-third increased class sizes as a result of the eliminated positions. Not as a matter of choice or educational preference, but as fiscal reality. Others have eliminated or delayed instructional improvement and professional development initiatives. Others have reduced operations to a four-day school week or eliminated general education summer school additional help or closed, consolidated, and merged schools. So just to help you put this in perspective and realize it's not just us in this boat. This is a national trend that we're dealing with, and a lot of the tasks that we have actually taken as a board over the last 3 years are consistent with what our colleagues in public education have taken as well. This just helps put the sequestration kind of where it is and what our aid has been in the last 5 years and how it has increased where it is. At that same time, during that same period of time, our TRS rates have increased on average. If I go back 5 years ago, just to remind you, my revenues aren't moving. They're fairly flat for the last 5 years. Our retirement rates, TRS, have gone from 6.2% to 16.25%. That's been an increase of 10%. Our ERS rates, non-instructional staff retirement, have gone from 7.4% to 20.9%, an increase of 13.5%. Wages, we have multiple bargaining groups, so it's hard for me to give you and across the board, but I think it's fair to say from looking at all of the contracts, there have been differences between the percents in there. It seems that 3 to 5% is a range that's been consistently bargained over the past 5 years. I'm not saying current, but in the past 5 years, that's what it looks like the averages are. So over 5 years, that's been an increase of approximately 20%, offset by reductions in staff. Not just Beekmantown specific necessarily. This is the trend. This is what we're trying to balance.
Mary, the TRS and ERS, what is the actual figures, or basically round figures first for?
TRS, if I can just go to my current budget status report and tell you, TRS is teachers' retirement, and we are at, for the current year, 1.4 million total, and on ERS we are at, that would only include my general fund, not anything I'm charging off through my grants, and on ERS we are at 601,000.
And those are both going up, though, by about $600,000 this coming year, total between the two?
Yeah, I don't remember the number off the top of my head. The number I know off the top of my head are the actual rates. The ERS rate is going from 18.9% to 20.9%, and the TRS rate is going from 11.84% to 16.25%. And that's as a percent of every dollar that we pay in wage to that particular instructional or non-instructional, we pay that percentage to the state to fund the defined benefit retirement plan. And there are some mandate relief proposals in discussion and in the works, as multiple political action committees, lobbyists have worked on, including School Boards Association, trying to work with the governor to come up with ways to avoid the peaks and valleys that we've experienced in these retirement contribution rates, to try to flatten it out and come up with different proposals as to how that can be done. Something we can look for in the future. On a revenue side, to try to put this all in perspective as to how it's affecting where we are specifically, I dropped in our aid revenue of approximately $472,000 overall increase based upon the governor's proposal. Our fund balance resource that we have, that we've agreed to use, the $1,065,000. Last year we were using $2.1 million, so that's actually a decrease of $1 million in revenue resource. And tentatively right now, I have a property tax levy calculation that's roughly around 3%, but I don't have all my exclusion items calculated. My exclusion items would include capital exclusion items as well as the retirement system exclusion. So during the year, to the extent that either of the retirement system's rate increases beyond 2%, ERS went up exactly 2%, but TRS went up 4.41%. So the spread, the extra 2.41%, is an exclusion item added back into the tax levy formula. In order for me to calculate that, I've got to log online and get some invoices and go back and follow the prescribed method to do the calculation. I expect my login to be coming any day so that I can do that. So that's to be determined yet. I would expect that number is another couple hundred thousand dollars.
So at least it might be as much as a percent.
Oh, it could be as much as a 1.5%. Right now, my tentative number without that is about 3%. So we're looking at maybe 4.5. I don't know, and I hate to throw those numbers out there, but I want to try to present what we're looking at for budget purposes to know what we're dealing with. So right now, for purposes of just putting pencil numbers down on a paper, I've used 3%. 3% would give us approximately $547,000 on the tax levy. That plus the governor's aid proposal of 472 netted out against the decreased fund balance that we have available, $1,052,000, we're down $33,000. So we're flat. My revenues are flat at best, even given this good news. Again, it's still developing, and we'll continue to work these numbers, but that's what it looks like potentially right now. On the expenditure side, the information we have so far, our general property and liability insurance expense, which is a fairly big number, it's under 200, it's more than 100,000. We've been told to budget approximately a 10% increase on that. We have had some claims in the past year. They've told us 10% in past years, and I didn't really go with that, and it came in less. But this year, because we have some claims history, I'm kind of leaning towards the 10% increase. So we'll see as that develops. As we gain new information, we'll obviously plug that in. The question is, sometimes that information develops after we're through the budget process. But another key component area is going to be our BOCES contract costs. We just had a meeting last week with BOCES. So one of the main components, besides all the services we purchase for special education, or the services we purchase for CV Tech and career education, The main component is the administrative and capital cost component. Our contribution is going up approximately $80,000. For us, it's about a 28% increase in that one line item. Career education, CBTech, I want to say, is going from just under 10,000 to like 10.3 or 10.4, so that's seeing about almost a 4% increase. Again, those numbers, we don't know, we don't plug them in until the students have gone through in this semester to determine what the choices are, and then we start getting some numbers coming out of the high school as to what we should be penciling in. As far as scheduling purposes go for the next year's budget.
Mary, if I could, at that point, with talking about BOCES for a moment, the increase, you know, the 10% or whatever the amount is going to be, keep as a perspective that the district taking control of some of the programs in-house has yielded significant savings in their own right. So while that percent is an increase, were it not for those efforts to take some of those programs back, not only perhaps would that amount be going up, but we'd be talking about eventually a greater investment into BOCES services. We're able to save a considerable amount of dollars through a lot of good work with Leanne Short, Mary's office, mine, all of us working together to figure out how can we best deliver the service, provide the quality service that needs to be provided, but do so at a rate that's more comfortable for us. And in the process, we've saved, I don't want to put a hard figure on it, but it's six figures of savings over all those efforts. So while we got an increase down to this one, truth in advertising is there's also been a tremendous amount of effort to save the district otherwise new additional costs.
I got a question on that. Is there, because I know that was, you know, besides wanting to provide more services here since we already know the kids, I know Leanne was also hoping to save money, and it sounds like we have, but is there any way we could, I guess, get a report that kind of shows what those total savings have been? Because I think, yeah, you know, it sounds like it's been a win-win, and I think yeah, having some hard numbers to kind of show that, you know, even if it ultimately only saved us, you know, $50, I think it sounds like we're doing a better job having the kids here. Mm-hmm. And if we're saving money while we're doing it, then, you know, knowing that is, I think.
Yeah, that's
I know it wouldn't be easy to calculate. But
well, interestingly enough, the number will, it's very possible that before this year is over, that number presented next week would be a number that's less than what we really have done by the end of the year. In other words, it's an ongoing process. So there is a point in time where we could say, so far, you know, this is what our efforts have done to help us. Please remember that we'll be soon entering into an agreement or contractual agreements on purchase services from BOCES. It's a time of the year where they lay out their services, how much it would cost if you bought the service, and then we start to compare those costs, obviously, with the costs of and needs in our own district. And if there's a way for us to accomplish getting our needs met at a less expensive cost to do so, we pursue that. So yes, we can build a report. I'm sure Leanne could build a report to put zero in on the amount of savings, and probably do so over a couple of years. But I don't want to put her under that kind of a pressure for a short-term report. But I'd say she.
Oh, it doesn't need to be short-term.
But
it
will even grow, I think.
You know, whether it's at the end of the year, she does some sort of assessment. I just think knowing. I mean, this was our goal. This was the purpose of it. And then if we can measure, did we meet that goal? Then that lets us know.
Perfect. Interrupting a bit, Mary, but as an example of how quickly that number can improve for us, literally at our administrative staff meeting, or administrative supervisors meeting today, we learned of an inquiry from a neighboring district to, in fact, let us provide services for their students, and we would work out an arrangement on how we could do that, at what cost would it be for us to pick up that service. So we're always looking for those kinds of things. And I think I mentioned, now that it's connected to CV or BOCES at all, well, it is actually, because it could become a COSER. But I'd mentioned in a previous board meeting that we're in the process of exploring the possibility of our fitness center playing some role into the establishment of a certified trainer certificate through BOCES. Well, if that can be worked out with our schedule and our facility, it's room rental and room charge for the program to be offered on campus for the area, for the region. that can be a revenue producer, is my point. So we're constantly working on it, and we will continue to do it throughout the entire budget process.
Just to break, I just want to make a comment on administrative budget, because that's the one we vote on for BOCES. Because we were saying before that it goes up fairly heavily, you know, lately. There's a reason for it, because about 3 years ago, the state said they had to put their healthcare costs in there. So now you're seeing double digits all the time, because their healthcare costs is being translated through the administrative line. So instead of being 2 or 3% like it used to be, it's 8, 9, 10% sometimes. So just to put in perspective that it does affect the admin. You think an admin line would just be administration? It isn't. The state required more things to get thrown in there.
Oh, and as we pull more services out of BOCES, their overheads are going to go up.
Yep.
On the BOCES side as well, you're right. Health insurance costs that are being put in the administrative side predominantly from retirees. So retirement costs for active employees in certain areas are part of the cost of the COSER of those areas being served, but it's actually the retiree group that's falling in under the administrative cap. And to be fair to BOCES, they've been very, very aggressive in trying to negotiate down those administrative costs. And some of the items that they have done to do that is they have moved some of the people from Plan A to Plan B across various units, collective bargaining units. They've increased employee contributions for health insurance. New hires after a particular date, which was approximately 3 years ago, contribute 50% of their health insurance premiums in retirement. This was in direct response to trying to contain that administrative cost to all the districts. They have language limiting insurance coverage for surviving spouses after death of an employee retiree. They've eliminated payments for unused sick time at retirement. Those were some of the factors, the elements that contribute to, even though that administrative cost is growing because of the retirement, they've made collective bargaining changes at that entity to help offset that. So that, yes, it is increasing, but it's not increasing as exponentially as it could be. And BOCES is very good about being transparent and giving us information and trying to lay this out there for us to understand. One other item for us that's going to have an impact, and we're still collecting data, the instructional staff deadline for retirement announcements has passed, but the non-instructional pass will be later this week as we continue to analyze that and determine with the principals what that means from a scheduling perspective and whether there will be any opportunity to actually have some savings because of attrition due to retirements. And what potential breakage costs will be because of retirements where you can put someone in the position that's at a lower step or salary schedule than a retiring person. Currently we have 8 instructional, I'm just going to say spots, cells in my Excel formula where there were budget numbers, those names are going to change. So of the 8 instructional, at least 6 will need to be backfilled, so there's potentially breakage savings on that, and potentially a couple may or may not need to be depending upon student schedules, which is still in the works and being determined. So we also have approximately 9 non-instructional people that have submitted notifications for retirement that will also result in some level of breakage. So there's some potential budget savings in those areas as well. After we have the final notification date, I believe is March 1st, we can then do an analysis on this and get with all of the building administrators, the principals, to see what does that mean to those buildings, who will need to be moved around to backfill those particular positions. The other item of update, which is tied to BOCES Health Insurance Consortium, we received when we were there, the estimated increase for health insurance premiums is going to be 7% for Plan A and 0 for Plan B. Effectively what this means, this is going to be the second year that Plan B has not had an increase in premiums. The spread now between Plan A premium and Plan B premium is 21.5% for informational purposes. And you know, we have all kinds of scenarios and calculations as to how we can potentially try to manage that and bring that up in future conversations.
Maybe I'll catch your breath if for no other reason.
Like, that's pretty much all that
I will on the health insurance piece with regard to the consortium. There has obviously been over the years has been interest on board members' parts to be there when the governing board votes on health increases, and so that's a public meeting. You have a representative. All the superintendents are their representatives for their respective districts, so I would be sitting at that table casting votes like everyone else in the consortium. But because it's a public meeting, if any board members, once I know the date, which I don't have yet, but once the date is advertised, I certainly will share it with you in the event that anyone wants to come sit in the audience and be a part of listening to how all the conversation is going. To understand what is being considered, what the questions are from the governing group asking the questions that we ask. We obviously would like to have any number increase be a lower number than the one that's proposed. So it all starts with that kind of a dialogue. Is this the best you can do? If it's going to increase this, we're being told 7. Yeah, but really? Really? Tell me why it can't be 6 or why it can't be 5. And that's what that group does with Lacey and Kay, or the group that manages the accounts. We did, and Mary is correct, the announced percentage is 7. There's a hopeful optimism also expressed that that could be a little bit lower, but certainly nobody's brought the crunch numbers together, but they're saying not to be concerned of budgeting more than 7, and we very well could be. It depends what the governing board votes on, obviously. But it won't be higher than 7 is the relative assurance we've been given, and it could be less than 7. How much less, we don't know until they crunch all the numbers and tell us. Like a school board has fund balances and liabilities to concern with for the future, so does the health consortium. So it's really going to be a question of what's the status of their health, no pun intended, with the reserve accounts and their investments and return on investments and who's leaving and catastrophic illnesses. They take all of that stuff into consideration and they break it out into a spreadsheet to say, it's our recommendation to the consortium that you accept an increase of blank. That's when the talking back and forth begins at the table as to this really, and then they will do, but so far, they will do what the majority vote of the consortium says they want done. But the margin of what's proposed and anything much more radically different than that will have some impact somewhere. And that's what their job is, to give you their best picture of the future. So I'll share that date when we have that date for the board to know.
Mr. Raymond, could you give us an update on our public survey for the budget?
Yes. The survey, thank you. The survey itself, the questions have been, as I shared with the board last time, we had a sample draft, I think I shared with you on the questions that we build into the telephone survey. For those new, perhaps for tonight not hearing this, it's a great PR pre-advertisement. We are preparing a survey, a telephone survey, of all of the known registered voters in our school district, which is in excess of 5,000 people. If individuals' phone numbers have changed since when they registered to be a voter, you wouldn't get that direct call. However, on our website is going to be an instruction inviting that if you're one of those folks or a handful of those folks where this fits you, contact us and give us the number and we'll roll you into the phone survey. So at the present time, we have in excess of 5,000 plus telephone registered household telephone numbers for which we would be administering the survey. The telephone survey is totally voluntary. There's an opportunity at any point during the entire survey to say, I'm done, or I don't want to participate at all. And that starts at the very front end of the survey. If you want to be a participant to it, we just keep going, and you keep going. We did field testing on the question. Gary, as you can imagine, and I have been working on this together, and we actually had some of our people who can't vote on anything because of their residency be our field test agents.
Oh, good. Okay.
And so we called them and said, we're going to, you know, be prepared. We're going to run this by you. Just, we're not so much interested today on your answers as much as you've gone through the survey. What can we learn from you having gone through it? So we've done the field test on that. It appears that the respondents rate would be anywhere between 7 to 8 minutes to complete the entire survey, with an opportunity to say, play that question back again just by hitting a key on the telephone, because I'm not clear what my choices are, play the end. So it will, with a key, all these instructions will be presented as part of the survey. So you can get the questions repeated if you want to. There are certainly opportunities throughout the entire survey that if you're not comfortable with an opinion or you don't feel knowledgeable enough to have an opinion, one of the options is I just don't know. And so that's an important piece of information, I think, for our board as we build our budget in response to these various questions. Our target right now is to shoot for, I believe it's next Monday, to actually administer the first round. There's also, we also have the capability with that survey to, for those who aren't home and who want to participate, they can call again later in the week and respond to it. So we're trying to increase.
So they can call in.
They can call and say, I missed the call, call me again, and the survey, they can, and then have the survey started all over again. That wouldn't be with a live person because
right.
We want to maintain as much confidentiality, and you can understand why. So the questions will provide a demographic, a way for us to sort responses by demographics, which is important, I believe. Who is responding to this in terms of what is their current status in, as a voter? Are they a parent with no are they a parent with children currently in school? Are they grandparents with no children in school? Grandparents with children, grandchildren in school? Basically breaking out the demographics so that later we'll be able to make sense of which group was saying what in response to these common questions that we'll ask for their input. So all of the responses can later be sorted, either by demographics or by frequency. For example, if a question 5 shows that, boy, 72% of the people who answered this question all answered that same way, what does that mean? Well, you will be able to print the reports out to say, here's the responses to all of the items, here's how they sort it out, and that becomes good fodder, obviously, for the board to say what to do with that, what sense to make of those responses, particularly as they could affect what becomes included in a budget. I certainly am going to pay attention to it because my first and eventually my final draft of a budget proposal to this board is going to be in part with the knowledge of what did the largest community representatives tell me about these important issues affecting a budget. At least play informationally, it's going to play some role in my thinking. But it also is information. That's what it is. It's collecting information from a broader base of respondents on key questions, hopefully, and provocative enough questions that people can have an opinion. And once all of that has been collected, we'll all be in a better position to have data from which to say what is our final budget going to look like, where is this going, where is this not going, what is in here, what is not in here. So that's my update. I target again, we're going to do a field test. We've done the field test. We are going to go live, if you will, I believe it's next Monday, and we'll do a repeat chance for late call-ins or people who missed their phone calls at home and know about it. So I'm saying spread the word, because if you know neighbors who didn't get a call and they're saying, when am I going to get a call, just call us and tell us you weren't called. And boom, we'll make sure the numbers are included, and at some point the machine will call you. And then we'll collect the data and analyze it by that weekend, and that will be a prelude to the next sitting board meeting, and it'll be a perfect opportunity for you to have the data in time for the next conversation. So that's my update on that. Thanks for asking.
Yes, sir.
Quick question on that. Are you going to be the one doing the analysis of the data? Is it going to be you and Gary? I'm just trying to think of.
Probably going to, minimally, I'm going to be pulling in multiple people in the administrative team to just say, are you reading this way or not? Because my intention literally is not to reach conclusions about it. It's just to group the stuff to have you know this seems interesting or this seems to be an important set of pieces. For example, if a particular demographic group overwhelmingly feels something, but it's the only demographic group that feels overwhelmingly that way, that seems to be something that we could say, oh, this is what it seems to look like. What I just said, there's a group that feels, our demographic that feels overwhelmingly this, and they are one of many, one of only, one of a couple who also feel that or don't feel that. That's how I tended to analyze. When I say analyze, kind of group the data in some manageable discussion points. But ultimately, making sense of this, doing market research, you know, making sense of this is how far to drill down the interpretation of the data. I think I'm just pleased that we are moving in this positive direction to collect a broader base sense of these responses so we can be better informed when we continue with our work.
Does our board have any questions for Mary or Scott? Yes, sir.
No, Mary can go first.
I just, at some future date, can we have like a little bit of background on consortium as far as like, the, you know, it's not like a private company or anything, but explain it to everybody so we all have a good grasp of what this, the consortium actually does and how it's set up, because
sure,
I don't think a lot of us do.
Yep.
We've been given, Manny gave us quite a bit of information on our revenue side, a little bit on the expense side. When do you expect to start giving us some information on the expense side from your end?
Yeah, then the expense side, driven in part by the resolution of the budget, and what's the sequestration will play a role in that. Not a huge role, but it will play a role. But then, as we pointed out to the administrators today, we presented them their current budget status with this year's budget, line by line, what your expenses are, how are they comparing to what we budgeted, are you under projection, at projection, etc. And then our next 2 weeks, certainly beginning now, much more detail, going line by line with the group and starting to make the harder decisions about this can we do without, or do we do differently, keep the service but do it differently, or this we can't afford to keep doing either differently or at all. That's the grunt part of the work that I'll be working on between now, from this day forward. And so I'd be bringing regularly, I guess my point is.
Do you expect like the next March meeting
yeah.
for us to have some,
yeah.
some
yeah.
detail?
Yes, I would.
Any other questions?
I don't have a question. If I could quickly add, we are working ongoing as part of the budget development. We're doing the analysis in case you were later thinking, oh, I forgot to ask that. We're always looking at the bus issue in terms of our quantity of our buses and our ridership, etc. That study is being completed as we speak. We're doing the counts of our daily ridership, and we'll have that as a report to be able to present as well. Probably doesn't have to wait to a budget meeting time, so I don't feel like it has to wait till then. So if we can get it all organized in time for my next update to you for your next board meeting, I'll include it in your next package as well.
Two quick questions. Where are we on the some kind of feedback from the K-2 consolidation study?
Different committees can speak to that.
Right now we're gathering information from the different buildings, from transportation, from special education, and we're establishing meetings and discussing that. And then we're supposed to meet again in March. But I think with the possible shifts in the elementary building that we might want to consider maybe putting that out another couple weeks because I don't know how that the person in the elementary building is really going to pull that together. We need it by March 8th. So
we've got a meeting this coming Thursday with the principals and teachers. And
which are you talking about the 28th?
Yep.
Okay. So maybe you will have some information.
Yeah, sitting. Principals
yeah.
are still here.
I was like, maybe you'll have
and so they set that meeting up with that date in mind.
Well, the teacher, but they're gathering how the teachers feel and you know how the different,
right.
mm-hmm.
how
my,
different people are feeling.
My second thing is, as soon as we get the bids in for the Excel project, can we schedule an operations committee meeting?
Yeah, Mira, we'll tag team on this one a bit because Dan is not here to point it out. But yes, as you know, bids are going to be released, and once the quotes come in on the bids, we'll have a margin of what's left in the project to be applied to things like technology, if that's what we want to do with it. When are the bids, Mary? I'm begging for your memory on this one. When do the bids?
March 5th or sometime next week, Tuesday or Wednesday
okay.
of next week.
Okay.
From memory, I think that's the timing.
Right.
Yeah, I want to say it was I want to say it was Wednesday, because
yeah,
people...
Yeah, and Tetra Tech will be here. It's a public bid opening here in this room, I think. And following the receipt and opening of those bids, Tetra Tech will tally everything up, go back, analyze it, make sure that the bids fall within the specifications that they have written, and then they'll make a recommendation to the district. And I believe they've committed to having that in our hands by Friday, so that potentially it could be put in board packets. So if the operations committee wants to anticipate setting a meeting from the following Monday or Tuesday, would be before the...
We could do the Tuesday before the board meeting like we've done in the past.
Yeah, I think it'd be good though, so we'd have some kind
then
of...
If the Friday timeline is met, then we could do it.
Yeah,
I mean, with your
permission,
shoot we can set
March
it up for
12,
that.
4:30.
Okay. So that way we won't go blind to the board.
Okay, Ed.
Yeah, real quick, you know, last board meeting, I asked questions about the testing issue to evaluate the standardized testing if people don't choose not to have their kids take them. So I wasn't premature on the question, because tomorrow night there's going to be a meeting at Petrova
in Saranac Lake.
Saranac Lake at 6:30 on that exact subject, and it came out in the paper Saturday or Sunday,
right.
And I only mentioned it last board meeting because it was something I became aware of just through the internet and several other things. Since then, I've also noticed that Rochester Central School District, New Paltz, and several other in the city have written legal resolutions against the state in refusing to do the standardized testing. So it's a little more complex than even I thought. And we need to look at when our parents choose not to have our students participate in this testing, what are we going to do with them? What are we going to do with the kids? Because their option is going to be either they don't let the kids come to school, which hurts us financially, or we have to do what other schools are doing, which is setting up something for them to do when they don't want them to test. So that's for discussion.
And I'll add a third.
Oh, and it was in a school board.
A third piece to that is if in fact there's an exodus of students on test days, that proves to be true in our district, there's also the fact that APPR is tied to scores from
correct
students who did complete the test. In other words, the evaluations of staff members are in part connected to the test
that's
scores
the, that's part of the concern
that comes out of the testing. So. So there you have it. You have decreased numbers of students on the input side of the test quadrum. You've got that will have an effect on the output side for evaluation.
You could also have someone gaming the system, like make sure these students don't come in. These other students do because they're better students. You know, you've always got to watch that because they could do that. Say, well, okay, you guys, you don't have to come. You know, someone's going to do that.
If Mr. Marin on that question, it's a great question then, it still is. I can ask the administrators to, as quietly as they can, do some projection on the talk in the buildings and the dialogue with either their PTOs as well as kids, as well as teachers,
right,
to get a sense of is this, to what extent do they think this will affect their attendance on test-taking day?
It might not be a bad thing to ask because you don't want to get caught. Right.
Asking directly teaches someone what to do on testing
yeah,
day. That's what I'm trying to avoid.
Right, that's exactly what I'm asking the question.
Good, good, good.
Mr. Amo, I know you and I had some discussion on the phone recently about this, but you did have that meeting here with some of the other school districts in the area to talk about some shared service ideas and whatnot, but we never really got much of an update from that, so I was hoping that you could provide us perhaps at the next board meeting with some information about maybe some ideas that are being tossed around and if there's anything, because all the schools are going through their budget processes as we are, is there anything maybe that came to the table that we might need to be looking at now that could help us in this year's budget process for next school year? Maybe in terms of some, you know, AP cap offerings and such.
Yep, I can do. There's a list potential list of things that could be included in that, and I will do so. I'm researching one, as I pointed out, we're researching a shared service concept with busing services with a neighboring district, but I just mentioned that as a passing item. I hope to be able to bring more teeth to that conversation with certainty. Right now, it's just a bunch of ideas of what maybe we could, what do you think? Mr. Brink, double speak here, I apologize, but Mr. Brink did meet with their transportation department. They do have information as a proposal of what we might consider doing, but that was by the transportation people talking to each other, not the superintendents. And some of the ideas on there, great if the districts could do them, but there's things that the transportation folks would say, yeah, why don't we just do this? Can't do because there's some contract issues and legal issues in the way, but that doesn't mean we've given up on the idea. So the next step is to pursue the list with the superintendent and myself and our business managers. I've already alerted Mary to that, and let's sit down and see how much of this is workable so I can tell you about an option called a shared service with some transportation.
Other than transportation, is there anything else at this time that might be on the table that, you know?
Most of the, not hard and fast. I mean, any and all ideas are worth looking at, as they were when we talked to that group. There are conflicts and limitations with X's and Y's, but they're all good ideas to say, here are a series of ideas. I just want to be sure I'm not misleading in thinking they're all going to be leading to a direction of, here's a plan, here's the thing we could do, here's the thing. There are ideas that we want to find out, can we do it? Is it possible to do it? So I'll do my best to keep going through those ideas that as those who were in attendance will remember some of them that were kicked out as 2 weeks before this. Can we do online learning? What's involved if we did online learning? Well, there's a whole series of things that you'd want to be aware of to know. Yes or no? Can we do it? Should we do it?
Mary?
And those conversations aren't limited just to that informal group, which was a representative from a board of education, a superintendent, and a business official, and it was kind of just this special ad hoc group to get together and synergize. Those conversations and discussions happen at each of our collective colleague meetings that we all have, local North Country chapters of business officials, superintendents, CSE chairpersons, building principals, and they're all talking about what can they do to help each other. And as a result, Mr. Amo just spoke earlier about potentially some CSE classes, specialized classes in related services, and being able to share services with another district, with our district being the host district, and potentially generating some revenue. But those conversations are occurring at several different levels.
Good.
At the grassroots level within each district as well.
And just a couple quick things. I sent an email to you all. I'm going to the Capitol Conference in Albany Sunday and Monday. So if you have any thoughts, they are going to take the day to walk us through the process on how to advocate for your school district when you meet your representative. I've secured appointments with Assemblywoman Janet Dupree and Senator Little, and I may even be teaming up with some area folks as well, going in as a group. I was contacted by our Area 6 representative, Esther, and we might just try to go in as a group and go it that way too. So if you guys have any thoughts, I know I have some thoughts I'd like to share with the representatives on the challenges that we're facing in education, but I'm anxious if you have anything important that you'd like passed along, please get that to me and I'll go with a somewhat of an agenda, and it will have to be modified based on time and things of that nature. And then the second thing was, about a month ago, I had sent out an email regarding a board self-evaluation process.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I just wanted to know if anyone had any thoughts on that, because my thought was it's a practice that you do amongst yourselves, and we could do it any time. So like a couple of us could be evaluating this meeting, a couple more people could evaluate another meeting. And then throughout, collectively through a few months, get those results back to me. I'll compile them, get them to Leonard, and then we would share those results on how to improve our processes.
That's good.
Do we want to try and, like, I mean, if we gave her ideas over the until the next meeting is March 12th, if we want to send her ideas that way, or do we want to do something, wait till the next budget meeting, which is March 26th or something like that?
I'll be in Albany on Sunday, March 10th, so either...
Well, I'm talking the self-evaluation.
Self-eval, like I said, that can be done anytime. It's just would be nice if it would be done within the next couple months, that everybody at least did one meeting. And you just do it yourself. The form I emailed to you folks, I have hard copies. It's not a big task. And then you just turn it in to me, and I could compile it.
Do we have a board meeting that's less packed than the others of the next? Even a budget meeting like this one, you can squeeze it in, at least to hand out the, or at least go over everything together.
Well, we want to keep these budget meetings to budget. Because if we start getting away from them, we'll end up back at regular meetings, and we said when we started these were going to stay to budget. So let's stick with our budget items.
I think that's fine. What you would do the evaluation while you were participating in a meeting. It would be going on in the background when you're listening to a meeting, how you feel on certain topics and areas. And then, like I said, in a couple months' time, when I collected everybody, I could then turn around and get the analysis. So it would be past probably the budget process by the time I had the analysis done. But it would give good information on how to go forward with any improvement plans.
And have a goal set for the next year?
Yes, Richard.
I don't mind people doing that. I would rather do it after the meeting, because I've found if I'm concentrating on that, I'm not paying attention to the meeting.
You can do it however you want to do it. You personally want to do it that way, that's fine.
Because like when we have people, we have the recorders, and they miss stuff from the meeting. Mm-hmm. You know.
Anything else? Yes, ma'am.
One last thing on the, Red, you asked a question on the consortium, and could we talk about that? And just to follow up, the consortium did, we gave announcements beginning last August to all of the employees on the health insurance. Consortium undertook an internal audit of eligibility of dependents that were within the plan. It's been ongoing for several months. It's just come to a conclusion. I don't have any reports yet, but I've verbally heard that they did find, I don't know off the top of my head, a number of dependents that were not eligible that had been on the plans. Mm-hmm. What that means is because our plans are self-insured, and basically our premiums are set based upon all the claims that are submitted within a given year, and it's divided out by the number of participants. So to have people that had been participating and filing claims that truly were not eligible and are now being taken out of the program is good for the consortium, and it shows that the consortium is being accountable to the membership in all the districts that do participate. Within our district, I don't remember the specifics. It was not a large there was a large number of people that had to go through the appeals process and actually provide information that hadn't been provided in the timeline that was set out. But at the end of the day, I think that for us, we dropped a couple of people. But consortium-wide, it was a pretty significant number.
Yeah, it was, and to piggyback on that from memory again, of those who filed an appeal, almost to the person, they were upheld. They were able to demonstrate, I really should get the service. But that number that filed for the appeal was less than the numbers that without the audit, it was presumed that they were eligible for it, and there are a number of people who never filed the appeal. So they, by self-choice, dropped out of the decision. Am I still included in these health coverage plans just by not filing an appeal, being told none of you are? So the 90, I think it was like 90-some people, 90-some that have filed appeals could demonstrate, yep, I really am in the plan. Thank you for the audit, and I can demonstrate that I do belong. But there was hundreds plus out of the total N that could have gone through the appeal, and there was above 90 some, they didn't. So.
All right. Motion to adjourn. Richard? Kathy? All in favor?
All right.
any more of what it is, your fluid in there?
Just keep moving, keep walking. They say it is.
Not for you.
For 6 months. Stay up to 6 months, so I'm only at 3.5 months right now, but still frustrated.
You're like me. Give me a hypo and I want to suck it up.
It's just irritating.
Did you push the papers button? Thank you.